Thanks for joining on this commission hearing meeting. I'm officially officiating it for the first time as commissioner and chair of this esteemed organization. And the board, thank you for being here. God bless you all. We have a lot on the agenda to cover, and I know I want to thank our Commissioner Rabbi Rick Steinberg for having done the last one in my absence, even though I was there for a brief moment. So thank you for that, but good to see all of you. Thank you, Rabbi. So with that, I will welcome all of you and our guests that are there listening in and the open forum. So I'll hand it over to Jamie back, and then we go to...
I will first call roll. Commissioner Briceño?
Here.
Commissioner Buck? No. Oh. You're muted. Oh, but I see you raising your hand. Commissioner Dobie?
Here.
Commissioner Faruqi?
Here.
Commissioner Hamill?
Here.
Commissioner Leach?
Here.
Commissioner Lee?
Here.
Commissioner Matsuba? Commissioner Steinberg?
Here.
And Commissioner Wang?
Present.
Okay, so we do have a quorum. So item two is opening quote reflection.
So I will share this. I just shared this on a call just a minute ago among some internal staff here during a presentation. And I'm going to quote Sir Robert Peel. And Sir Robert Peel is the chief, considered the chief of modern policing. And he wrote a lot about policing in the late 1890s. And if you were to read his seven principles of policing today, other than the fact that the vernacular is a bit different from that that particular era, the principles still hold true today. And they talk a lot about community policing. And one of the things that he said is he said, "The police are the public and the public are the police." And that's the quote that I wanted to focus on today, and what that means, and how relevant I think that is today, and I think it's an ideal that every community should still aspire to. And what that he basically said in saying the police are the public are the police, is that the ideal that we want to strive for is a community where the police are so invested and integrated in their community that they are seen and embraced as part of the community. And conversely, the police themselves feel as though that they are invested and part of the community as well. And I think that if we look at all the things that have happened in American policing, especially the murder of George Floyd, that was a punctuation mark, involving a lot of different things where police have not made great decisions, that if we look back to Sir Robert Peel and what he has offered to us over 100 years ago, those principles still hold true today. And again, it goes back to community building and goes back to humility and truly listening to our public and striving in the end to truly become so integrated with our community as a department that we are embracing and trust as members of the community, not just as a different or separate entity that is there to police or enforce laws. So that is what I wanted to share today.
Thank you so very much, Commissioner Campbell. I appreciate that. Good reminder. So, maybe we move on to the next.
Yes. Item three is a monthly summary of commission activities.
Commissioner Lee. She's muted.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
I think you're not muted. Keep talking. So the commission, I'm sorry, the activities overview monthly for the commissioners is, if you look at page 5, it's the fiscal year of July to June of 2021, and we had We have met to date 10 of our 12 meetings, and we've had one HRC annual report. The police community reconciliation case, we've exceeded our goals, and it looks like in majority of it you can kind of read through it, that we've met and exceeded, especially in our support to the hate crime victims. Our goal is to support 8, and to date it's 67. So I kind of want to bring a highlight to that. And police community relations, the monthly meetings, and then also the intergroup relations and relationship building, we've had quite a few, it looks like, trainings at UCI, and we've had a lot of activities. So that's kind of like the summary of our activities.
Thank you very much. You've made a lot of progress. There's a lot that's going on, but the work that speaks to what our staff is doing and what the need is in different areas, and especially in the hate crime and incidences that we see that continues to grow. It's really sad in different ways. But thank you for that. Okay. Now to the open forum.
Okay. If anybody wishes to speak, please hit *9 on your phone or the raise hand icon on your Zoom app. So far we have three requests. So I will start with the first one that I saw, which is Felicity Figueroa. Hold on a second. Let me unmute you. Okay. Go ahead. You're muted, Felicity.
Got it.
There you go.
Okay. Now, thank you so much. It's nice to see such a full commission there. Wanted to thank you for this opportunity to speak. And I see that on the agenda that you're going to be speaking about the Sheriff's Interface Advisory Council later in the meeting. And as the ministry's board chair for Irvine United Congregational Church, I've been attending these meetings for the past couple of years. And just remembering this morning how our dear friend and the former president of the Orange County Interfaith Network, the late Mike Penn, brought up the inclusion of the word advisory in our title and was told by the sheriff that he received advice from many quarters and didn't really need it from us. So I thought maybe a rethink of the name might be warranted. However, I would still hope that the group, together with all of you on the commission, might be able to push the Orange County Sheriff's Department towards using some of next year's potentially huge public safety budget, which is being discussed this month by the Board of Supervisors, to instead be utilized to create crisis response teams staffed with mental health experts and EMTs to respond to these kinds of mental health and crisis calls. Sheriff Barnes himself has said that he's not in the business of dealing with mental health issues, and now would be a wonderful opportunity to pass that work off to a much more qualified group who might be able to avoid the disastrous outcomes we've so often seen in the past. And lastly, I just wanted to say how unsettling it was to me to read the recent article in The Guardian highlighting the extremism awareness training program being used by the Orange County Sheriff's Department. Apparently, the program equates violent right-wing white supremacist groups in QAnon to peaceful anti-war protesters and animal rights advocates. In the article, the experts criticized the training for falsely presenting the far right and the extreme left as, quote-unquote, as equivalent threats, when data absolutely shows that white supremacists perpetuated the large majority of recent domestic terror attacks. The experts also noted that the training suggests that sheriff's officials were acknowledging that their own officers could be drawn to far-right groups and were concerned about the risks of them posting racist or extremist content, which unfortunately sounds like the sheriff is more concerned that officers might embarrass the department by publicly voicing their beliefs and exposing themselves as fascists than the department is about having extremists among its deputies in the first place. So when a department warns officers about the no justice, no peace protest chants common at racial justice demonstrations, while claiming that one of its own deputies caught wearing a patch from a far-right militia group while on duty was just confused, then to me there is reason to be deeply concerned. Thank you for listening to my comments.
Thank you. Okay,
thank you.
The next speaker is Lulu Hamad. Go ahead.
Hi, and good morning to everyone. Thank you so much for giving us a chance to share our thoughts with you. I'm calling because I was very disturbed by a comment that was made at the last meeting when the issue of ethnic studies was brought up, and I think it was you, Rabbi Steinberg, that, who said that some of the content was made or was used to pit one community after against the other. And as far as I'm aware of, and I've been following this issue very, very closely, there are two objections that always come up when we're talking about ethnic studies. It's usually the white supremacist objecting to the critical race theory, or it's the Zionists objecting to the Palestine and Arab ethnic studies, and any mention of Palestine. And it's extremely unsettling for me to have this not be the stance, because as a Palestinian American, I've been silenced, or a lot of people tried to silence me numerous times. I'm very, very concerned for how my daughter at school is going to be treated. And without the proper ethnic studies curriculum that supports understanding all different communities, that gives them the platform to speak about their issues and their culture and their community in large, how are we going to see ourselves in our own communities? Just recently, as we were celebrating the 8th on May 12th, OSHA canceled a meeting by one of their student clubs because they were talking on Palestine. It was an unprecedented act for them to abruptly cancel this meeting without notice, without checking with the students who organized it, without even checking what they're going to say or what the content of it. They just assumed, because it was talking about Palestine and the Israeli attack on the Palestinians at that time, at the height of the attack, when we were watching on the news whole families wiped out, they just assumed that it's going to be anti-Semitic, or assumed or just claimed that it's that it violated school rules without really notifying anyone what those rules are and what was the violation. And I have family members who attend that school, and they feel silenced. And my daughter is preparing to go to that school. So if we're silenced like that, and if we're not able to see ourselves in our curriculum, if our communities are not presented in our curriculum, if we have a letter from Peter Levy back in February claiming victory because they succeeded, the ADL succeeded in removing the mention of Palestine, the mention of BDS, which is the Nonviolent Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Against Israel, the mention of Rashida Tlaib, the first Palestinian woman congresswoman. If that's the achievement that we're talking about, this is not pitting communities against the other. This is furthering the erasure and the silencing of marginalized communities like me, like my people here. So I hope that this issue is further discussed. I know that it was on the agenda last week and it wasn't discussed, I think, until the person who presented it is present. I hope that we take the time to look into this and to have an honest discussion and say that discussing Palestine and Israel is not inherently anti-Semitic. Actually, the assumption that it is inherently anti-Palestinian. And I hope that this is taken into consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we have one more. Pat Davis. Go ahead.
Thank you, Lulu, for putting that together so very well. I was concerned as well, and as we look at the work done by our school, it's got to be inclusive. So thank you for that. But I wanted this morning, for Anna presentation. I'm familiar with that program, and I'm encouraged that many of the cities are taking on that approach I know Brandon Foe put a nice article this morning in Voice of OC, and hoping that that does move forward. Part of my concern is the CAHOOTS program in Oregon continues to be the example everyone refers to, even though some say it rather funny. I'm very familiar with that program, the family who worked in the program, as professionals, as providers, and it's taken many, many years to get to the point that they are being referenced. And mind you, now the dollars are flowing because everybody wants to put some money into it, but there's not enough money in our county to do this. And Foley, Foley this last board meeting when they went over the budget, made good points that the county needs to be providing more resources to our cities to do this work, and asked her colleagues to explore that, because while cities are doing it, the money is coming from somewhere. My contention is it's not enough, and if it's the same providers, I'm not sure that the approach will be different. Folks on the street are pretty smart, and they remember people. I hope the providers who are social workers, professionally trained, are adequately paid, and that they look at something besides a shelter model for the referral system. The shelter model's been around a long time. There's nothing on the other side of it. And I would hope that this group would explore supporting and bring your collective voice to the conversations about the housing first model. It works. Budget advocacy needs to be bumped up, and I'm always there asking about money that you all could better use and more of it. But I'm just appalled at the shelter model continuing. We've built quite an industry around it. And I'm hoping that if the providers are going to end up in these contracts, and I welcome the approach, law enforcement shouldn't take a gun to a club to meet up with folks. And again, I support our Anaheim folks. I give them a hard time as often as I can. And yet, here they are, and I appreciate that you're bringing their model forward. I almost can read my notes. No, and I don't know how much you all follow the budget process. I know it's an odd way in which you're supported, but it would be a good room to be in. And the 22nd, the county will finalize it. And again, the dollars going to so-called public protection far outweigh what's going to community resources and the work you do. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We have no other requests to speak.
Yes, we will now move on to item 5.
Item 4, actually. Review commission officer nomination process and approve nominating committee members.
Okay. All right. I think we all received in our package the information that Norma sent out. It talks about the appointment or the majority vote for chair and vice chair each year that's coming up. And the term is for 7 years, I mean 1 year, limited to two consecutive terms. I don't know if you have that in front of you. And then it talks about the committees and how that would work. So Norma, do you want to go through some of this and give a little background and timeline on how we go about this?
Sure. So if you look at page 7, it's broken down in the discussion section. At today's meeting, the commission chair will call volunteers to serve on an ad hoc nominating committee and approve that by majority of votes. And the nominating committee is going to meet at least one time before August 1st, and that is going to review the slate of the nominations that come through. So commissioners who are interested in serving could nominate themselves, or they can nominate someone else, and should send the information to ad hoc nominating chair before July 26th. The ad hoc will review the slates review all the nominations. And then at August 12th meeting, the nominating committee will present the slates and then open the election process to accept any other nominations that can come from the floor. Commission will take a vote on the chair position first, and then the vice chair, And the nominees with the highest number of votes will be elected to serve for 1 year, starting August 2021 to August 2022.
Thank you, Norma. So at this point, do we appoint or ask for an appointment of a nomination committee? And who goes into it?
You will ask for volunteers.
Yeah, volunteers.
Who
right.
like to serve. And if I'm guessing, it's can't be no more than four, right? to
sorry.
Make sure that we don't violate the Brown Act.
Yes. How many people in the nomination committee? It'll be two or three? Or it could
it's
be
up to you. No more than four.
No more than four. Okay. All right. Well, do we have any volunteers on the commissioners who want to be on the nomination committee?
I'd like to make a nomination.
Please, go ahead.
If I would like to nominate Jennifer Wang to be on that committee.
Okay. Commissioner Wang, are you willing to serve?
Sure, I'll serve. Thank you, Hayden. I didn't realize that. Thank you.
Okay, so we got our first one. Thank you. Thank
I'll
you.
Volunteer too. This is
Janie.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Janie. Appreciate it. So we have two more to go.
Actually, I'll volunteer as well.
Good to have you. Well, there's one more slot if anybody else wants to come in. Or
I'll be happy to serve on that as well. This is Commissioner Matsuba.
I was just going to nominate you, Commissioner Matsuba.
Oh, thank you. You know, I haven't seen before, and I was hoping you were on the call so you could hear me do it, because I hate nominating people when they're not here to hear me.
Thank you, Commissioner Dolby.
Thank you. Great minds thinking alike. So we have your four nominations to the nomination committee, and if I'm not right, do correct me, it doesn't absolve you from being, or does it absolve you from not being nominated or picking yourself? No. You can be a chair or the vice chair, you can put your name down for that as well.
Someone can, even if you're part of the ad hoc, you can be nominated or even throw your name in the ring for
exactly okay wrong yeah so that I just wanted to put
Commissioner Faruqi, you still need to identify who the chair would be for this nominating committee.
That will be within the committee itself, right? And would I pick one, or do they pick among themselves?
I don't know if you want to tell or for a month.
Well, who wants to volunteer to be a chairperson, or else I pick you? Do we have anybody that wants to volunteer to lead yourself in the committee? I'm looking at Matsuba. She is smiling. I guess she wants to.
I second that.
Wow. I was just taking a breath, Commissioner, for me.
Well,
that's fine. Yes, I will be happy to. I'll be happy to.
Okay, well, that's going to be great. So I guess we have our nomination committee, Commissioner Wang, Commissioner Lee, Commissioner Ada Briseo. I don't know if I'm saying your name right. Please correct me.
Ada Briseo.
The N is silent. Is that right?
It's an N in Spanish, so Briseño.
Briseño. Good. All right. Thank you for helping me out on that. And we have Commissioner Matsuba as well as chair. Thank you. I appreciate that. So with that, we'll have to take a vote on this, Jamie.
Yes, we need a motion and a second, and then I'll do a roll call.
Okay. We need a motion for this. Do I have a motion to proceed?
I move to proceed with the nominating committee as stated.
Thank you, Amy. And do we have a second?
Get it real good. I'll second.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Dolby. So, all in favor, we'll take a vote.
Yes. I have to do a roll call since we're teleconferencing.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Commissioner Briseño?
Aye.
Commissioner Buck?
Yes.
Commissioner Dolby?
Yes.
Commissioner Faruqi?
Yes.
Commissioner Hamill?
Yes.
Commissioner Leach?
Yes.
Commissioner Lee?
Yes.
Commissioner Matsuba?
Yes.
Commissioner Steinberg?
Yes.
And Commissioner Wang?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
The motion carries.
Yes.
We have a nomination committee. Thank you, folks. You have your task ahead of you, and I'm sure you'll do a great job in nominating the slate and presenting it at our next meeting in August. So appreciate that.
So item number 5 is commissioner authorization requests for events.
I think this is in line with what Commissioner Reynolds, Dr. Reynolds, had, and any events coming up or events that need to be informed to the commission, so we have it on our calendar. I guess that's the intent of it, and how to go about it, authorizing those events to be communicated. Is that what it is? Norma and Jamie, you can help me out on this. Is it the request for events now?
This is just a standing item for if commissioners have gotten requests or foresee that there will be a request for them to speak at an event. They would suggest that we add it here and then ask for authorization in this case to get it approved.
Is there anything coming in the future, or they have something coming up now? So, do we have any of those situations with any of the commissioners? I know Commissioner Wang is out there more often in public spaces, among others. So, if you have those opportunities to speak on behalf of and you want that request authorization, this is your time to notify or at any other time in the future.
I have a question, please.
Yeah, go ahead.
For clarification, is this strictly for if one is asked to speak or if one simply attends an event? And what I reference is I recently attended the Stop Asian Hate rally that was in Irvine. While Commissioner Wang, I believe, spoke, and by the way, Commissioner, I apologize for not introducing myself that afternoon. There was a lot going on, as I know you were quite busy. But I was not in a speaking position. Is that still something that has to be brought forth? Because I had about 24 hours notice when I was asked by the supervisor's office to attend because no one else was able to. I just need some clarification. What are our, how do we fulfill our obligations, but what are our boundaries?
I appreciate that, Commissioner. Good question. I will defer to Renee and Norma. If you're going in your personal capacity, there's nothing that holds you back from attending any of these. But if you're there invited and you are asked to speak, this is my understanding, as a commissioner representing the board, then you need authorization for that. So I think that's if there's anything missing there, if you, Renee or
yeah, and just to add, yeah, that's exactly right, Chair. It does not have to be approved in this meeting. I think the previous chair just liked having it on the agenda as a standing item. So if you did have advance notice, that you could get it approved on the spot during the meeting. But if it's short notice, it's just a email or a phone call to the chair. So Chair Furry would receive the call from you just as a courtesy call to let him know that you'll be attending. But like you said, many of you have other roles. And so, like, Jennifer spoke at that event on behalf of her other role. She took off her commissioner hat. She was not there as a commissioner. She was there in her day-to-day role. So many of you have different roles. So in those other roles, as long as you're taking off your commissioner hat, there's no need for that courtesy call or that information to get relayed to the chair unless you so choose. But the other is just as a courtesy, so we know where our commissioners are, we know where we're being represented, and there aren't any surprises, so that's the
Renee, may I follow up on that just a little bit? Thank you. That gave me clarification. does one when perhaps is kind of semi have their cap on, but not completely. Does one introduce themselves as a commissioner, or does one just say, I was asked to come on behalf of, in my case, Supervisor Bartlett's office? Do I at all indicate that I serve on the commission?
Sure. So I think in that case, since it came from the supervisor, she was asking you to keep your commissioner hat on. So a simple email or phone call to Chair Fareed would have been appropriate in that case.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that.
No problem. And if any time there's any gray area, feel free to reach out to myself or Norma or both of us, and we'll keep each other in the loop. But we just want to ensure that everybody's on the same page and that we all have an understanding of where we are and what we're doing, so that there's no surprises if, in fact, it is covered by the media or something to that.
Right. And to that, if I may add, thank you, Renee, for that clarification, and to Norma as well. And a good question, Commissioner Zardowski. But if you're making a statement, you're on behalf, let's say you're invited and the supervisor or somebody asks you to represent the district and you're invited to any of these events, and then you're approached by a media outlet or a journalist or somebody there wanting to get a statement from you, that becomes a little tricky situation. So I just want Renee or Norma to kind of clarify that as well, because that's something that each of us face sometimes, and I have been in that situation myself, and you do not know what to do. So if you can get some clarity.
So if it's an official statement, the bylaws do allow for it, but they allow for it only if there is a vote of the commission as a whole. And so that would need pre-approval, obviously, if you have a true statement. If you're just generalizing the work that the HRC does and it's within the bylaws, there's a whole section at the very beginning of the bylaws that basically say what the HRC is supportive of and what the roles and responsibilities of the HRC. And if you're just making a basic comment that supports the commission as a whole, that would be okay. But if you're making a specific statement, the statements have to be pre-approved by the entire commission. And if there's time in a regular meeting, this would be the opportunity to do that. Or if there needs to be a special meeting because we absolutely have to have a statement, the chair can call a special meeting to get that statement approved.
Thank you for that. So with that said, I do not know if there's anything at this moment with any of the commissioners that you need that kind of a thing, but you have directions to it. You can just make a phone call or email and CC Norma on that as well. I would appreciate it. So we have all the loop on that. So, any further discussion on this item? Fine.
I would like to share quickly before you move on. I think I shared this before, but I will share it again because I also wear multiple hats, but one of them is a city council member for my city. Whenever I'm invited anywhere, I only wear the hat that I was invited under. So some people, once they find out, oh, and you're on the human relations committee? Yes, I am. But I can invite you to our meeting. I can send you to our agenda. I can let you know where our bylaws are. And my other suggestion would be if we have like a landing page of sorts where if people have quick questions about what we're doing, we can avail them to that. I've suggested the same thing, and our city is now doing the same thing because people will have questions about whatever's hot at the moment. So it's on our website, and I drive them right there. Because what I've noticed, and maybe y'all have too, the media, sometimes they say what you say, and sometimes they say what they do. And those are not always the same. And you do not want to be responsible for what someone else hears you say. So also, when I give statements, I prefer to put them in writing. I don't give verbal statements any longer except my name and rank. I will not speak on anything else. So I avoid the whole issue of being misconstrued. Because sometimes, you get to talking and your passion comes out. There's a certain word that gets said. So in my official capacity as a council member for my city, I put statements in writing. And I drive people to what has already been pre-approved for press release anyway. And when I tell y'all I've stayed out of trouble.
Smart thing to do, Commissioner. So you've been there, you know what it is. So now that's a very good advice, good suggestion. So I think you can definitely adopt that or follow. Thank you so very much on that. If no no further comments on any of the other commissioners, we can then move on to the next item.
Okay. Item number six is discuss possible commission statement denouncing hateful actions from public towards Dr. Chow and his family in their home.
Commissioner Wang, Jennifer Wang.
Thank you, Chair Reed. Thank you, everybody, for attention regarding this matter. I don't know if everybody's too familiar with this. This actually happened almost 3 weeks ago. And so I'm going to actually take some time to just read the statement that Supervisor Andrew Doe and Doug Chafee actually wrote 3 weeks ago that I was reading. Really quick. Chairman Andrew Doe and Vice Chairman Doug Chafee of Orange County Board of Supervisors strongly condemned the targeting of threats and intimidation towards Dr. Chow, Dr. Clayton Chow, Orange County Health Officer and Director of Orange County Health Care, at his home by protesters who wrongly accused Dr. Chow of forcing people and children to get COVID-19 vaccines. On the evenings of May 18 and 19, 2021, more than 50 demonstrators gathered outside Dr. Chow's house each night until late evening, chanting loudly derogatory comments as well as making threats. This has caused great disturbance to Dr. Chow and his family, including stress-inducing confusion and fear to his elderly mother. This conduct is particularly intimidating to Dr. Chow and his family in light of the disturbing rise of anti-Asian hate crimes in recent months. This behavior needs to stop. We condemn this attempt to manipulate public health policy through personal intimidation. Chairman Andrew Doe and Vice Chairman Doug Chafee expressed complete support of Dr. Clayton Chow. Dr. Chow has been a strong leader in leading Orange County through the COVID-19 pandemic. His proactive approach in developing a robust testing and vaccination network, creating one of the first health equity vaccination testing programs in the state, has allowed Orange County to have among the best COVID-19 indicators throughout this past year. Dr. Chow has worked tirelessly 7 days a week since he joined the county a year ago to help Orange County effectively fight this pandemic. Our entry into the yellow tier this week and our high vaccination rates are due in no small part to Dr. Chow's dedicated efforts. So at least when I read this, the key part really is when there's mention of the fact that, one, they're targeting them with, you know, threats and intimidation at his home with 50 demonstrators, you know, until late evening. And when I read this, I wasn't surprised. But at the same time, just because I'm not surprised doesn't mean that we shouldn't address it. And I think that as a commissioner, as a group, you know, we need to reflect on what our mission is. Because I did think about it. Okay, is how relevant is this? He works for the county. What does this all mean? And for me, it is relevant. It's in a neighborhood. He has neighbors. He has neighbors who probably have children or whomever it is on that street or in that area. And our mission here is to seek out causes. I'll read our mission actually for our commission. Seek out the causes of tension and conflict, discrimination and intolerance, and attempt to eliminate those causes. So when I was reflecting, I was really thinking, I need the heads of all our commissioners here to discuss, like, how do we address this? You know, I don't know if, you know, there's a one-time solution or what kind of stance do we take, but I wanted to present this here so that as a whole, we can see what we can do for our county, because I don't think this is really an isolated incident. And I don't think that it's going to stop, you know, without some sort of intervention. And we have amazing representation. For example, if Chief Hamilton provide us with insight, I was like, you know, is there something that law enforcement can do? Or maybe they're doing, I don't know, right? Or, you know, Amy, who I know, who's experienced in the county, like, what does this all mean to county employees? What does this all mean to healthcare agency employees? In which we're still in pandemic, we need them to work without this added stress of people protesting about certain things. In my view, it's non-existent. You know, if they're protesting about the passport, that's already off the slate. If they're protesting about, you know, vaccination, that's a choice. So I just want to present this here. Thank you.
Jennifer.
Yes, Chief Hamel.
You mentioned about the role of law enforcement in this, and, you know, I have a couple questions. First of all, I'm saddened that this is happening in his house. Some of the questions that, of course, we as law enforcement will ask is, you know, the nature of what is being said. When we hear about threats and intimidation, you know, are they threats of violence, in which case it could rise to a level of criminal conduct? Are they vandalizing his property? What's the nature of the vandalism? It could be a hate crime. Is it hateful speech, but there's no threat, so therefore it's not a crime, but it's considered a hate incident?
Uh-huh.
You know, those are all considerations, and while at the same time, you know, then the other part of it is, you know, how much is it protected by the First Amendment, as horrible as it might be. I mean, those are questions that I'm not sure what city Mr. Chow, or Dr. Chow lives.
Dr. Chow lives in Fountain Valley. His whole address,
Dr.
we
Chow.
Saw it online. They posted
yeah.
online his address. It's Fountain Valley.
Got it. So I mean, I don't know for sure, but, you know, I would imagine that the Fountain Valley Police Department is probably working in cooperation with him, you know, and asking all those same questions. But the bottom line is that, you know, that's one thing that we really try to focus here in the city of Irvine and other departments too, is being very sensitive and thoughtful in how we respond to these incidents, you know, especially with the rise of hate crime and hate incidents, especially against the Asian community, and being thoughtful that we are responding in a way that is right and correct in documenting hate crimes and hate incidents while still, of course, doing so within the framework of the First Amendment.
Thank you, Commissioner Mike Hamill and Jennifer Wang. Appreciate that. I think this is a very sensitive issue and an issue that needs to be addressed. I'm glad both the supervisors and Dr. Shafi put out a statement on behalf of the county on this. But to what we need to do as a commission, I think it's important that we address not only this immediately. I know you had requested a special meeting. That didn't come about, and now we are here at the regular meeting and addressing this issue now. But at that point, Commissioner Wang, I do not know what you had in mind. But it was just—was it just putting a statement out and we are addressing the issue, or is it bringing some of the stakeholders or having some kind of a communication and support and to Dr. Chow's work as the county the person working in health area? Or something else. So, maybe
Mr. Chair, there are three people who have their hands up here. I don't know. If
I'm sorry, I didn't see that. Okay.
I'll just say, Jennifer, I'm so glad you brought this issue up. I spoke at the Board of Supervisors 2 weeks ago about the inappropriate and painful comparison of web mask wearing to the Nazis making the Jews wear yellow stars on their sleeves. I mean, so horrific. And what I always say in these instances is they have the right to use their free speech for hate. We ought to use our right to free speech to speak of love, tolerance, and community building. And so I'm happy in conjunction with you, if you'd like, to write a statement to be presented on our next agenda that really talks about the inappropriate nature of all of this business and try and really refocus where our community is at, away from hate and towards love. I think that that kind of a statement coming from this commission would be really important. And, you know, I don't know if it'll change minds or it'll just preach to the choir, but be that as it may, we should not go uncommented. In other words, if we don't make a statement, that's a statement. And we ought to make the statement. And, you know, as Commissioner Fareed is going to roll out the new proposal to the Board of Supervisors in short order, we need to address these things. So free speech that is legal but immoral and hurtful versus trying to speak to the list of people's spirits and souls. So thank you for bringing this. I mean, it's so, so good.
Thank you, Commissioner Steinberg, and I see that I believe Amy and Commissioner Bettino that are there, so whoever, please, go ahead.
So, thank you for bringing this forward, Commissioner Wang, and so, to make sure that everybody's aware, as you may already know, but this is not the first time that this was contested. that were made or threats made against our public health officer. This also occurred a year ago with Dr. Nicole Quick, and I had the pleasure of working. At that point, I had worked at the healthcare agency. I was able to work with Dr. Quick. There were also protests at her home. There were threats against her. In the United States, over the last year, there are over 200 public health officials who have been either have been either fired or have retired or have resigned because of the threats that are related to COVID-19. I work in COVID myself, and for a lot of us, we've gone a whole year without a day off, and I really appreciate you bringing this forward, Jennifer, because I think when these kinds of threats are made, and I would say last year I wanted to bring it forward to the commission, but I'm embarrassed to say I didn't have the courage to speak up because I was so horrified by what was happening to my colleagues, and didn't want to be the public health girl that's whining about public health being threatened. But none of us should be threatened in order to save one another from this pandemic that has changed our lives. And so I appreciate you bringing this forward. I wish I had the courage to bring it forward last year. Definitely appreciate the permission to do it.
Thank you, Commissioner Aileen Buck. I appreciate that for your comments and support. And you'll go to Commissioner Messina, please.
Thank you for bringing it forward. I want to also, in addition to what's happened, we also, many of us know that our supervisor Foley also had a very similar event at her home, unfortunately, and her family was harassed. Her son was harassed. They were being called names, and you know, to the son, they referred to his mother as a whore. Unfortunately, she was called a traitor. They took pictures of the family license plate. And this is, you know, just as the other incident, also the address was spread all over the internet. So I'm thankful that this issue's been brought up, and I'm hoping that we can be inclusive of all the incidents that are occurring and that really need our voice to speak up.
Thank you, Commissioner. I appreciate that. So, as a action item, I believe, or what we have talked about, we want to put something out as a statement. Does anybody else have a comment? I see. Commissioner Leach, did you have something to say?
Yes, I just recently offered a unity statement for the Interfaith Council of Greater Rancho Santa Margarita, and we are reaching out in a collaborative partnership to ask other interfaith groups. That's one of the other caps I'm wearing. But I am wondering, can this commission reach out to other entities, and kind of following what Rabbi Steinberg said, that, you know, if some groups can canvass with love, with hate, can we canvass with unity and love and positive type of things? But I'm wondering, can this commission reach out to not only faith entities, but business entities, chambers of commerce or something like that? Because it seems to me that where the economics are, that people may sit up and listen a little bit. And if this is happening to our county leaders, it could happen to our civic leaders, obviously, as we've seen with Supervisor Foley. But is it our place, or can we do that where a canvassing done, where we reach out to others to ask them to either join in our unity statement or to create one of their own so that it becomes basically a billboard against the behavior that has put our people in danger.
I think that's a very good, excellent suggestion. I don't see any reason why we cannot. Obviously, have to clear the commission and get approved. Any statement, we have to send it back to the Board of Supervisors. You cannot approve it as well before we put it out there, whether it is a joint statement or a statement on our own. So that process will still remain, but there's no reason why we cannot do it. If there's any other comment or addition to this, if not, I'll just wait for anyone. Norma, do you have any thoughts on that as what you see?
I think, Commission Chair, I would suggest that, because I know that Jennifer offered and then Rabbi also offered for the statement to be drafted. I wonder if an ad hoc can be put together so the other aspects of that Commissioner Leach just offered could be also worked out. Just so there's a plan, right? There's a statement, but also the plan on how and who and things like that are worked out.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I think that's a good thing. So why don't we put an ad hoc committee together? And I know there are a couple of them already out there, but those are specific to tasks. I don't know if you can put any of it in there. You know, or we just set up a new one. So, especially addressing this, is that what we are, Norma, is that what you are suggesting?
Yeah, well, it feels like the statements should be drafted and done before the next meeting. Yeah. So the ad hoc itself would work out the statement plan and it would solve after the next meeting. It wouldn't be a long term.
Not a long term.
Because the statement should be, at least in my view, it should be released by the, or at least brought to the Commission for approval by next meeting.
Right, right. I'm just thinking loud, because we do have this ongoing situation where we do need to put out a statement, some communicative, that we do in different situations that come up. Is it possible, I don't know if the bylaws allow this or if we can structure it that way, that we set up a kind of a standing committee, if you will, ad hoc committee that is for communication and media, right? And I say that I'm talking about putting out statements, coming with a formulation of what that would mean, and then the action items or solutions. Putting out a statement is one part of what we do, but we also want to follow up with the action. So is that possible?
So, Chair, this is Renee. You'd have to change the bylaws to include that committee as a standing committee. The standing committees are identified currently in the bylaws, so they've already been identified.
Okay, so we
Mr.
So
Chair,
at some point you could suggest, you could definitely suggest making that change, but it would have to be a bylaw change.
Okay.
And you bring up a great point, Mr. Chair. As Renee can tell you, this is my ongoing issue of timely statements from the Commission that take 3 months to get.
Yeah.
Timely is a quarter later. And Renee, where are we on the? If I could just interrupt for a second, Mr. Chair, on the.
Yes, please. Go ahead. You have more background to this. Yeah. Go ahead.
Renee, where are we on the bylaw changes?
So we have been forest meeting, and we do have some draft bylaw changes. The county as a whole will be approving a bylaw template for all county commissions and boards in the very near future, I believe in July or August.
July.
So we're waiting on that template to ensure that we're compliant with our suggested changes. And then in addition to that, because we are now working on this new proposal, and then we have obviously our annual contract, we wanted to make sure any changes in, whether we try to group them together or any changes in the annual contract would need to be reflected in the bylaws, that we included those as well. So the bylaws have been put on hold as of this point, but all of the changes that we've made throughout last year have been incorporated in the draft. So again, we're waiting.
That makes very good sense.
Great. Thank you.
So, Renee, if I may follow up on that, if there is still room to add, and I have to go back and read it, I don't remember. So, if something of this nature that I just suggested is not there, and that standing committee needs to be, so that it eases the process, you know, to what Commissioner Steinberg was just mentioning. If it takes 3 months for a statement to get approved and put out, it's already too late, might as well forget it, right?
Sure. So we can definitely look at adding another standing committee that would be, you know, titled Communications. You may recall that we already have one, and an additional standing committee that's proposed in the draft bylaws, which is the Goodwill Committee. Remember, at first it was started as kind of an ad hoc, and then now we're considering an ongoing project. So ongoing projects can't continue to serve under the ad hoc model. They have to be turned into a standing committee. So that is already in the draft as a placeholder. So we could definitely include a second addition being labeled something of a sort of communications committee.
And how soon would you need something like that? And do we need a committee to put that together, or just it, between the board, we just suggest and say what that would do?
So once we have the final draft, the HRC is going to have to approve, or not have to vote on the bylaw changes. Ultimately, the Board of Supervisors has the ultimate authority to approve or not the bylaws, but they do go to the HRC as a whole beforehand. And part of the approval process requires me to tell the board, you know, that whether the HRC, you know, voted unanimously and or there were concerns, and then again, it's their ultimate decision whether they want to move forward with the changes.
Right, right. So what my question is specific to, if you have to add this, let's say, communication media or whatever the title may be of that standing committee, and then I'm also looking in light of the new proposal that we are putting out with the supervisors, in the work that comes to the on the agenda which is coming up.
Right.
So I'm looking at a broader basis, so it gives us some teeth and some leveraging to do things rather than waiting and delaying, right? So whatever that standing committee has as a mandate to do within the bylaws, that item add on to the existing bylaws that are still under review. So should we put it in the next 2 weeks or by the next meeting in July, we bring it up to the board and we take a consensus on it and then let's pass it on to the legal and whatever else to massage it and make it part of the bylaws.
Sure. If I'm understanding you correctly, you can definitely establish an ad hoc that would develop some language that you'd like to propose in the revised bylaws.
So that ad hoc committee can be this committee which is right now going to be writing a statement. It could be the same committee that can propose this. Is that correct, or is it has to be a separate ad hoc committee for the bylaw change?
No, you can combine your task into one ad hoc if you so choose.
Okay. I'm glad you mentioned that, and that's what I was trying to get at. So we cut the chase and we get the job done a little quicker. So appreciate that. And to Commissioner Steinberg as well for bringing that up. So with that said, why don't we set up a committee, and I will go and have Commissioner Jennifer Wang lead that, or she can pick, or we can pick the people that all want to be part of it. I can call out the names, but I don't want to do that. But I would like for Commissioner Wang to take that search. We have people that want to serve on this committee, it'll be communications, media, and whatever you want to call it, that will address the media statement that we want to put out, but also addressing the long-standing committee on the bylaw change. So, are you okay with that, Commissioner Wang?
Yes, I think we can move forward with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you can pick maybe three more people on that committee. So I will leave it here. Oh, thank you, Commissioner Steinberg. Appreciate it. Do we have two more?
I will also volunteer.
Excellent. Thank you.
Not to lie.
All right. We have all four thing. I think we are limited to four from what I hear from Renee. So we have four commissioners, and I believe Commissioner Wang, would you be leading that as a chair?
I would, if the other three agree, because we're all volunteering for this.
Unless somebody else wants to take it on.
Yeah,
You're okay? Everyone else is okay with that? All right, very well. So we do have a ad hoc committee for media communications and bylaw change recommendations. And we have the names. So do we, Jamie, get a resolution? We have a motion to this?
Yeah, you don't need to because you are the chair. You can just establish them.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
And I apologize. I missed the fourth name. I have Commissioner Wang, Steinberg, Leach, and who was the fourth?
Okay.
Thank you very much. Okay.
Very well. Thank you so very much for that. And so we are all set to go. We got the work cut out. Appreciate that very much. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. We move on to the next item.
Item 7, Anaheim Police Department, homeless support via critical care response team model.
I'll do the introduction to this. As many of you know, the commission staff partner with different law enforcement agencies and are part of different chief advisory board groups. And Maureen Nettavoy actually is a member of the Anaheim PD chief advisory board and has been working and connecting with Lieutenant Lorenzo Glenn on this new program that the Anaheim PD has launched. And it really focuses on the partnership of community and law enforcement addressing a community issue. So we decided to invite Lieutenant Glenn to speak a little bit about what the program is, what they're doing, and then there are also some of other partners that are in the Zoom room with us, that work with them. So he has about 15 minutes to completion, and then members of the public or commissioners are able to ask questions after. So I'm going to hand it over to Lieutenant Dunn. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. On behalf of Chief Cisneros and Deputy Chief Rick Armendariz, thank you for having us talk about our community care response team. Also on the call, we have Sandra Sagart, who is our code enforcement manager, and Matt Bates in charge of CityNet. So just want to talk about how this team came about. So during the summer, after all the civil unrest and calls for defunding the police department, you know, across the nation, Chief Cisneros talked about this at a staff meeting and wanted to take a look at how do police departments get out of those calls for service that deal with homelessness, mental illness, and substance abuse that have no criminal nexus to that? So he tasked me with taking a look at different agencies across the nation to see what they're doing. So I took a look at various different departments from Denver, New York, Los Angeles, and one in particular in Oregon called CAHOOTS. And so CAHOOTS has been in place since 1989 in Springfield in Eugene, Oregon. And they consist of a mental health professional and a service worker that handles calls for service from those two different police departments. And so after several different high-profile shootings and uses of force involving, you know, unsheltered people and people suffering from mental illness, we took a look at this program pretty closely. And so, like I said, this program has been in place since 1989, so they're doing something right. But when I talked to the police department in those two jurisdictions, it wasn't uncommon for the police department to respond code 3, lights and siren, to assist this team in regards to dealing with people on the field. So when I took this information, came back, talked to our staff that in regards to what this team did, I said, you know, it's a great program for their community, but it really doesn't fit, you know, Anaheim. And so what we did, we already had our pieces of this team in place, specifically dealing with CityNet, because CityNet has been involved with our city since 2014 to provide outreach and services to our unsheltered people out in the street. So before I talk more about CityNet, Matt Bates will talk about, you know, his partnership with the city, and then also Sandra Sagart will talk about the continuum of care that we have provided our unsheltered individuals, dealing with these calls for service. So the first 6 months that we took a look at the calls for service, the police department responded to approximately 10,000 calls for service dealing with homelessness. And that equates to about 13% of the calls, all calls that we received in the last, in the first part of 2020, the first 6 months. And so what we wanted to do is create a team to respond to those calls for service that had to deal with quality of life issues, things that, you know, the police department typically did not respond to. Now, when I talk about, you know, the history of, you know, police departments responding to these calls for service, I'm talking about my 30 years and involved in law enforcement, because a lot of these calls for service have come to the police department because we operate 24/7, 365 days of the year. And so we wanted to make sure that how do we, you know, effectively respond to the needs of our citizens, but at the same time making sure that, you know, we wanted to provide a team that had the expertise and the training in regards to this. So with that, I'll invite Sandra Sagart to talk about, you know, the continuum of care and the history of what we've done in the city of Anaheim.
Great. Thank you. And thank you, commissioners, for allowing us to speak and highlight our program that we've been working on and our pilot that is currently underway. My name is Sandra Loza. I'm with the city of Anaheim. I know I have Sagart. I've changed my name a few times. I've been with the city almost 30 years, but I appreciate Lorenzo introducing me. So we have four goals with this program, and meeting with the chief and their team is really kind of reimagining how our police interact with our homeless. And we noticed with CityNet being out in the field and outreach working, you know, 5 days a week, normal business hours, 8 to 5, they were doing some good work, but that's not what we really needed. We needed a more robust outreach program. We were doing really good work, but we still weren't getting to everybody and getting as many people off the street, which is our main focus. And our police kept still being first responders in a lot of the situations that we really wanted to pull away from. So during 2020, along with everything else going on, we did a lot of research, as Lieutenant Glenn mentioned, kind of pulled all the good, bad, and ugly from all these different programs piloted throughout the nation and kind of formed what we call our Anaheim way of doing things and what's going to work for our population. And then we created four goals, and we presented this pilot program in December of 2020, December 15th, and started this pilot program 2 weeks later on January 1st. The four goals were, one, to divert calls that are non-emergency, non-criminal related, regarding homeless activity away from our police being first responders, and having skilled professionals out in the field to actually respond first and really provide a different type of response without a gun and badge, and have skilled professionals such as mental health clinicians, nurse practitioners, as well as our outreach workers. So our community care response team operates 7 days a week, 14-hour shifts from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., and that's where the bulk of these calls for service, non-emergency, non-criminal, were coming in based on the chief of police data. And so we were able to start diverting calls January 1, and I can proudly tell you we've been able, on average, to divert 30% of our homeless calls coming in each month away from our police department answering and responding first, which is on average about 500 calls. They get on average, as he mentioned, about 2,000 a month. We were taking a third of those away from police even responding. So our police dispatch triage that, let people know that, you know, it's not a criminal activity, it's not anything emergency related. We have this new skilled professional team, our CCRT, that can really get out there and help the individual. And it starts to create a different reimagining of us normally wanting to call the police, actually now starting to call CCRT. So not only are we diverting calls, we're starting to see calls going down coming into police dispatch now that we're 6 months in. Another goal was related to COVID, and that's because this funding for this program came out of our federal dollars through ESG, Emergency Solutions Grant Funding. If this came out through the pandemic, normally Anaheim gets about $380,000 of ESG dollars every year. We got $8.4 million or $8.2 million. And so we pitched this program to our community development group, and they were excited to hear that as they're working on housing to get a more robust outreach team out there, not only to get more people off the street, but also get more data so we can match the right housing with the right population that needs it on our streets. So that's a huge connection when we're talking continuum of care. So we've already reached out and provided personal protection equipment. We've also provided awareness on where to get tested, where to get vaccinated as part of the ESG requirements related to COVID, because this funding was very specific and restricted to homeless and COVID. And we've already had over 1,200 engagements since January 1. And we're also now working with the county to take our vaccinations to the streets. So we're done vaccinating our shelters right now and have a system in place as people come in. But there are people that just don't want to be in a sheltered environment or have a housing voucher and are waiting for that and just don't want to be in that group setting. So getting our vaccinations out to the street is huge. And by having CCRT, our county teams are going to be able to team up with that very easily in the coming weeks. The third goal was to get more people sheltered, get more people off the street. And so by having individuals 7 days a week, 14-hour shifts, that's been huge for us. And we are, as of today, averaging 3.3 people off the street a day. We've seen our shelters increase significantly when we have almost 300 people in our shelters. And to give you an idea, our point in time count in 2019 was 694, so we're really climbing to getting almost half of our shelter into some type of sheltered environment. But even more importantly, we've been able through CCRT to actually get over 20 individuals straight into permanent housing, which is unheard of. That's very, very difficult to do. But knowing our population and knowing those individuals and keeping in touch with them on a regular basis, we've been able to even get people not even to bypass our shelter situation. And then also working with our community development, we've been able to match our individuals we're bringing into the shelter with housing projects. For example, we just finished completing the El Verano, which was an old motel that we tore down and built housing for our homeless seniors, because CityNet was able to do a census count by name and get information and know that we have an aging homeless population. And we built that right next to our first project, Rockwood Apartments, which was for families, which is right next to Lincoln Elementary School. So now we have children going to school that used to be unhoused. Now we have formerly homeless seniors that are actively engaging with the schools and the children. And through that opened up in December of 2020, and we were able to process 50 individuals out of our shelters into that housing. And then we also have, in the next month or two, a motel conversion project, an old Econo Lodge that is going to be Buena Esperanza, that's coming online with 69 individual housing units, and we are now processing individuals out of our shelter and from the streets into those types of units. So we're really starting to open up that pathway instead of being on a one-way street, kind of getting on a little freeway type of action for us. So we're excited. And on top of that, we've been able to match all of our data we're gathering with community development, who has in the next coming months and years, 500 to 600 housing units for homeless coming online. And again, our homeless count back in 2019 was 694. We know that may be adjusted a little bit, but we're trying to, what we call, solve homelessness by creating a huge pathway where from the street you can have a housing unit through our pathway home. And then our last goal was to regionalize, to take this model and make it a regional approach. We already do it with a lot of other programs with the county. For example, our animal control contract or animal care services that we have with the county, a lot of cities pay into that, and they have a full system of care, shelter, responding to calls and all that, and all the cities pay into that to keep it a robust program. And I think with that type of program in place, that is another model that we can also create for our individuals, neighbors that are experiencing homelessness. So I know we can do it. We don't mind leading the charge. We don't mind being a cheerleader for this commission and other county boards to show what we're doing and what it is working. And I know there's a lot of other agencies in the county doing something very similar. So the more we can kind of get synchronized and consistent across the county, I think it's going to be huge. Again, not only just from, as Ms. Davis talked about, getting away more away from the sheltering and actually creating that housing from the street to the home. So I'll turn it back over now to Matt Bates, just to kind of talk from that nonprofit standpoint. As government employees, we knew we weren't the experts in this field, so we had them come in and do it. I just want to give them a couple minutes to kind of talk from their perspective on what they're seeing on the street.
Good. Well, it's afternoon now. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you. I want to add my thanks to Lieutenant Glenn and to Sandy's. Thanks to the commission for having us in. So just to speak a little bit about some of the implementation and a little bit to fill in the gaps on the scale and the scope. So the CCRT teams, there's a 27.5 FTE on this project, so 27 people. Sandra mentioned 7 days a week, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. There's 3 to 4 teams during peak times, and always at least one team available during those hours, 7 days a week. There's also live dispatch, so we have operators who are trained to receive the calls, both that come from Anaheim Police Department and calls that come directly from the community. And in terms of call volume, as was mentioned, a significant portion does come from the Anaheim Police Department that are direct diversion of calls that go into the PD. But in addition to that, we to date from January 1 through today, over 1,300 calls have come in through Anaheim Anytime, which is the city's app that has been used in past years for things like reporting graffiti or, a tree that's fallen down, or ways that the community can engage the city and let the city know that there's issues that are needing to be addressed. And for this project, that has been expanded to include homelessness, and so that's been a very popular avenues for people to contact the CCRTs directly and not have to go through the police department. So over 1,300 calls that way, and then an additional 3,500 calls, which is actually the largest segment of people that have just called our dispatchers directly. So we've published a number and distributed it at community events and online and to homeless neighbors when we go out. We've responded to 3,500 of those calls. So a total of over 5,700 calls dispatched today, and responded to by those teams. And the teams are multidisciplinary teams that consist of homeless outreach professionals, case managers, mental health clinicians, nurse practitioners, and also unarmed plainclothes safety officers. And then we have access through partnerships, formal partnerships, to Cal Optima for medical intervention out in the field. We've got a relationship with a nonprofit called Share Ourselves, where they can provide telehealth medicine, where a physician in the field, if it's necessary, we can open our iPads and have a physician on call who can make an assessment in the field. Mental health crisis, behavioral health through the county, and then city partners, multiple departments that Sandra and Lieutenant Glenn have mentioned, also the operating partners of the shelters and even property storage. So our teams are busy all day, every day with this project and focused on this project. And I think a lot of the things that we've done in partnership with the city have been, working behind the scenes to develop communications and interface with law enforcement so that we know when to call them but also not to call them so often that we're a burden to law enforcement, and we're really not saving them time because they're having to come out and support us on all of the calls. The other thing, I guess, to kind of close, it's not in any of the stated goals, and it's not in any of the reports. I think it's just understood, but it's something that is true, which is that all of these contacts, over 5,700 calls, like I said, have been conducted safely. So this is a new model. It's a pilot project, and when that kind of thing happens, you're never quite sure exactly what's going to happen. But sending teams out with unarmed, safety coordinators as opposed to, armed and uniformed law enforcement, in the back of our minds, the concern was, could we conduct such a thing safely? And I think we've demonstrated through the first, we're not even 6 months into the pilot project, that we can handle a high volume of calls, that we can conduct them effectively by connecting the homeless neighbors to resources and including shelter and housing, that we can assign homeless neighbors up for case management, that there's a desire to be connected to services, to leave the streets, even if that's not accessing the shelter system, but going directly to permanent supportive housing, but also that this can all be done safely. And so we're very proud of the fact that there hasn't been, you know, knock on wood, you never know what could happen in the public sphere, but there hasn't been any, you know, injuries or episodes where we've needed, you know, police to come in and intervene to intervene in a situation that has gotten out of control and is unsafe. So we're really proud of that. Again, it's I think that's an understood goal and an understood metric, but it's also something I'm proud of, and it's worth highlighting because we really have seen that in the field where our teams, because they don't have the badge, they don't have the uniform, that we can make connections, it can de-escalate the situation where there may be tension, otherwise there's not tension. And I should note, you know, Anaheim Police Department has been a terrific partner with CityNet. You know, we've been a partner with them actually since 2014, and we know how much their officers care, the type of training and support that they receive for homelessness. But still, there's just no getting around the badge. For some homeless neighbors, there's just no getting around the badge and the uniform. And so when we're out in the field, we've just seen an ability to make those connections and to provide those services in a way that is safe and in a way that we can communicate back to the city and to the community the effectiveness of what we're doing, so that there is a so that people know that they have an alternative to dialing 911. Because as Lieutenant Glenn started with his comments, it is true that in the field 24/7, there's really two populations. It's the homeless neighbors and it's law enforcement, and many community members, but just by default, have been trained to call law enforcement if they see an issue, even if there is no criminal nexus or no public safety issue happening. And so hopefully we're retraining the community in Anaheim to reach out differently to the different community.
Thank you. Thank you, Lieutenant Lorenzo Glenn, and to Sandra Seeger and Matt Bates. Amazing work. Thank you, Norma, for bringing this to our commission's attention. Amazing work. It kind of up to what we are proposing and planning to do. That may be a separate conversation. But I see some hands up there. Commissioner Leach, would you like to go first?
Yes, I had a question. When there is a definite mental health issue that the workers find, and I'm thinking sometimes former vets who are homeless who may be suffering from PTSD or something like that, is there a place that they are taken to receive medical attention? And do we have enough places to address these type of problems?
Well, here at the Anaheim Police Department, we still have our psychiatric emergency response team. We're the only police department that employs two officers and two clinicians that respond to those calls for service. So in regards to your questions, yes, we could always use more places for us to take people that are in mental crisis. But what's unique about this team is that they also do follow-up. So if there's an officer, a patrol officer, or this team out in the field that has somebody committed for a mental health evaluation, this team also does a follow-up for that. And then also, what just came on board is Be Well OC. That's a great place that has opened up in the city of, I think it's Orange, just right on the border of Anaheim, but I know they're going to have more facilities open up. So these are great partnerships that we have, and we've taken some of our people over there as well as CityNet.
And just to add on to Lieutenant Glenn, BULOC has reached out to us to try and partner together. BULOC is a temporary facility. It's not. They do have some residential programs up to, I think, 90 days. So if you're housed and you go there and get stabilized or have issues addressed, and you're able to go home and get transportation. But if you're unhoused, that's a little tougher. And we don't want you to get stabilized and then go back out to the street because you're just going to go right back into mental health crisis. So our CCRT, if they take anybody to be well that's unhoused, we actually go get them. And then we make sure they stay in a sheltered environment. And so Marshall and their team at BeWell-OC has recognized that little piece missing. And so we're actually looking at proposals to blend the two together, because obviously BeWell-OC addresses more than just the unhoused. It's all everybody. And so, but we do think there is a definite connection that we can expand even our CCRT relationship with BeWell to handle even more mental health issues with our homeless population.
Thank you very much. And I see Maureen Dodavai, our staff member. Maureen, please.
Thank you so much. I wanted to just take a quick opportunity to thank Lieutenant Glenn, Sandra, and Matt for coming, for doing the presentation. I really wanted to acknowledge Anaheim PD for taking this opportunity while serving on the CAB. We really wanted to take the lead on reimagining public safety and making sure that when officers arrived, as Matt mentioned, they arrived without a gun, without badge, that 30% diversion with 100% safety, it's huge. It's huge to have community members learning that process. And it's going to take time. It is a process. It will take time. But for us to have that 100% safety and, you know, for community members to call 911 and know that, oh, okay, to have somebody at that 911 who's trained and is able to divert that call and have somewhere else to go to and have a proper response team, as Sandra said, you know, with those goals in mind, and then have the right people respond, and having Anaheim PD take that lead, it's reimagining public safety in ways that the community is actually asking for, and the police chief and the assistant chief they're listening to the community, and that's what we're saying, right? That's what the community is asking for, and that's what they're doing. So I really wanted to just take a quick moment and acknowledge that in our meeting, and that's precisely why I wanted to encourage Lieutenant Glenn and his team to come and do this presentation, because I know that the community members are concerned. They're concerned about our homeless population, and I wanted to just quickly acknowledge that. So thank you.
Thank you, Maureen. I appreciate that. That was inviting Lieutenant Glenn to this. So we go to Commissioner Mike Hamill.
Thanks, Fareed. I just want to commend Lieutenant Glenn, Chief Cisneros, and IPD also. You know, really the early adopters of this. Of course, we know that this has been a model in at least one other state in Oregon for a long time, but it has not been implemented in California until now. And so, again, Anaheim PD has really taken a leadership role in this. And what I'm seeing, in anyone's curious, 100%, this is going to spread like wildfire throughout the county. You've already got, you know, Huntington Beach coming on board with their own version of the program, working pretty well. It's around the corner. Garden Grove has publicly said they're going to do it. We're actually bringing an IME council this month to talk about it. And what I'm hopeful for is that you look at, you know, you look at all these different sort of systems in place now, and it was just said, I just said it, but there's still a lot of opportunity to perhaps still serve the individual interests of our own communities, but where we can pool resources and create even better partnerships, and it's only going to get better, I think, for our county overall. Because some of the smaller cities may not make financial sense to have, you know, a dedicated team for one small city when there may not be enough calls. But if you know, say for instance, take three surrounding cities and put them all together, or maybe there's a larger, you know, effort on the part of the county as a whole. These are, it's all very early in discussions, I know, but again, it just goes back to, you know, someone's got to do it first, and I believe Anaheim did it first, and I'm excited about the possibilities and how this will truly enhance the level of service to our homelessness population and our mental health population across the entire county.
Thank you, Chief Michael.
Make one comment, Chair? To the Chief's comment, you know, we've been almost 6 months in and kind of being consistent on that diversion rate, and so the Chief and their team looked at the next set of calls coming in that we could look at, and so now we are actually looking at those low-level criminal calls, which the majority are trespassing, and actually looking to have CCRT go out there first, whether they're on a railroad or on Caltrans or maybe on a vacant lot, and really have CCRT respond to the first trespassing call that comes in and actually have them issue the warning instead of a police officer and have that documented, and then only so that first call get diverted, and only if a second call comes in would then the police be involved in having to do any type of enforcement on trespassing. So that's our next game changer, and we're hopeful that that'll get going a little bit too.
Beautiful. Very nice. Okay, we have Commissioner Tanya Adobe.
Thank you. I'm big on giving folks big kudos, so Anaheim, thank you. It is absolutely outstanding. It is something all of us need to partake in. I know in my little baby city, we mighty though. We have a homeless liaison officer. It's actually one of our police officers that goes out, and because we got, you know, maybe one or two displaced folk, and most folk know them by name, so it's more like, hey, you gotta, we want us to take you somewhere, or whatever the case may be. So I like what Chief Hamill was saying. But my question is, have y'all got a system together for the people who do not want help? Because I hear a lot of that. Like, you'll come across people, they don't wish to be housed, they don't wish to be in a shelter, they wish to keep their tent up exactly where they are and live off the grid underneath the freeway. So do you guys have something, or is there something in the works for that? And that's what my council had on with that specific issue.
That's a great, great question, Commissioner, and we do, and we're still working on that as well. So as we try to balance outreach and enforcement, we've now created a more robust street outreach program with CCRT. So we are looking on the enforcement side, but we are really sending CCRT out there multiple times. And we've noticed, and there's been some studies, that it takes about 8 to 10 touches on individuals that are a little service resistive. And so by having this team out there 7 days a week, 14-hour shifts, they're touching them more. So we're actually getting to some of the little service-resistant, but the other thing is we're holding them a little more accountable out there. So we're letting them know through CCRT what they're allowed to do, because at the end of the day, it's not a crime to be homeless. If that's something that you're just not interested in, our shelter system, you're just kind of waiting for something else to come along, as long as you're abiding by all the laws, that is totally up to you to do that, and there's nothing wrong with that. And so we do have that group, and then we have the ones that really drive up a lot of calls for service that may be heavily addicted or have some serious mental health issues, and that's a real hard conversation with those individuals when they're in that mode, a crisis mode. And so we keep working on our partners with Orange County Recovery Collaborative. They have donated bed space each month now, so if we have someone heavily addicted, we can actually use space that they've provided. So we're really starting to collaborate more with a lot of our partners throughout our city. Grandma's House of Hope for domestic violence victims and families. So we're really starting to pull everybody together so we can get people straight off the street depending on what their situation is. But we are looking at the enforcement piece a little bit harder to make sure that if we've offered enough resources and they're still struggling, that we need to maybe up the ante a little bit. And kind of balance out that outreach and enforcement, whether they're staying in the park after dark or they're on Caltrans property. There's still rules that they have to abide by, and so by having CCRT out there a few times first, when enforcement comes in, they've been fully aware and have had full opportunity to leave that location and go into a safer place before we do enforcement.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I appreciate that information.
Well, I think this has been an amazing insight, great pilot project, incredible work that has been done. 5,700 cases of people being addressed, calls taken, and all that. We are trying to learn some of it on our end as we go into our next line item, kind of segue. can definitely collaborate. The platform, the way that you're doing it in Anaheim, so other cities can adopt, conserve resources and be more effective. So really kudos to all of you and great work. Thank you, Lieutenant Glenn and Matt Bates and Sandra for that. Thank you.
And thank you. You guys are always welcome to come to our city and have a ride along with our CCRT team and kind of see what they do boots on the ground. Happy to share any information.
I'll sign up for that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Yes, thank you. Okay, Jamie, I guess we are ready to move on to the next one.
Okay, item number 8 is ad hoc update, Board of Supervisors proposal.
Okay, that's me again. All right, thank you. Well, we have been working on the scenes behind, and the commission must be wondering, where is the finished product? How come we don't see it? We have been putting a lot of effort behind in the committee and the ad hoc committee with Amy, Norma, Jamie, and who are the other committee member? I'm forgetting. Joanne, Commissioner Joanne as well. So we were asked to go back and to revise and make changes and more descriptive and detailed how the program is going to roll out, how the dollars are going to be deployed, what is the assessment, the measuring of the success of rolling out such a extensive program, the capacity building and on community engagement, working with the community-based organizations. So there's a lot of detail in here besides technology, data tracking on different services that we would provide. What does it mean in year one, year two, year three? So we are almost there in sending it off. Renee and her team have been extremely helpful in guiding us along. As to what the expectations of the supervisor would be. When she looks at this draft, it's still a draft, even though it is pretty much done from her side, I think. But there could be input from her staff and herself. This is Supervisor Lisa Bartlett. Before she feels comfortable that she can take it before the Board of Supervisors. And then, obviously, we'll get a look at it once she gives her feedback, then we'll bring it to the Commission, because we don't want to make it public until it is okay with the supervisor and the rest of the board at that end, on the county end, so it doesn't, we don't let it off the bag early on. So I will let perhaps Norma and Commissioner Amy Buck to give a little bit more on this of the work that has gone in.
I don't have much to add except to say that the four commissioners who have been working on this have been putting in a lot of hours and time and work. I want to specifically give kudos to Amy, Commissioner Buck, because she has been amazing in making sure that some of the language is coming back from the board that we're able to understand it. And with her county background, it's been essential in really putting and formatting this proposal in a way that's going to be understandable and legible for the Board of Supervisors. So kudos to everybody, but specifically to Buck for really taking it up and leading us the right way. So we're hoping that by the early next week, the commission's going to have and submitted this last portion of the proposal to the county.
Thank you, Norma. Thank you. And definitely, my hat's off to Amy, Commissioner Amy Buck. She has put a lot of effort. I mean, she understands the game. She understands what it requires from a county standpoint, working within the county. So that was a great job. The entire committee did an excellent job, and we are still at it. We are, in fact, having a meeting tomorrow to go over it one more time before we turn it over to Renee and the staff so they can do the final packaging. Hopefully, everything goes through well and goes to the supervisors, and we get called in for whatever Q&A and other things. But this is a back and forth process. It's not a small dollar amount, it's in the millions of dollars, 2.9 million is what we are looking for. But if it comes true, we could do similar to what we just heard the Anaheim, the pilot project that they have been putting it out. This will give us capacity as a commission to hire more people, do more work, outreach, impact. And that's where it is. I mean, we can talk all day long, but we have to be on the streets doing the work. And this will give us the capacity to do so and make a difference and hopefully reduce, if not eliminate, hate incidences and biases and all that. So, Amy, would you like to say something? No.
No, not really. I feel like it's been covered. So, we're just moving forward. And, you know, especially for our new colleagues, the gist of it is there's kind of like three main areas. One is to improve the documenting of hate crimes and hate incidences, and really improving like linguistic access and cultural aspects of that. And then another part is to provide support and services for folks who have experienced hate crimes and hate incidences. And then the third main component, and that would be, you know, through the organizations that already exist. Like, there's so many great, you know, organizations that are the first place people would go if they experienced discrimination. And then the third item is really around using a collective impact approach. There's so many coalitions out there. We want to not reinvent wheels, but leverage strengths and mend any gaps and be assured that we're not duplicating efforts.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Amy. So, any questions or comments? I know you're not looking at the document, but in principle, if there's anything from the Commission. No? Okay, good. Thank you. Appreciate that. I will turn it over to our next line item, Amy.
Okay. Item 9 is Commission staff reports. A, Hate Crime Prevention Network meeting, and B, the CARO event resources legislative bills impacting HRC work.
Thanks, Jamie. I'm going to have actually my colleague me speak about the item 9A.
Thanks, Norma. So the next and first Hate Crime Prevention Network meeting will take place on Tuesday, June 15th at 1 p.m. PST. And in this meeting, we are going to go over the programming and outreach calendar that I've developed for 2020 to 2021. So it'll be a year-long program and efforts to tackle the issues that we are talking about today. We're also going to go over different events, workshops, and support needed by the community and how we can work alongside the community. And then we'll also go over the roles and training for each member and what that looks like. So I'm very excited to meet everyone in that network and to update you all on what it looks like.
Thank you. Thank you, Nia. I appreciate that. I look forward.
Thanks, Nia. The second item on this for 9B, last month, CARO hosted their quarterly convening, and it was focused on two legislative bills that CARO had been asked to sign on to, and one was focused on the creation of the State of Hate Commission for the state of California, and then another one was specific to improving training for law enforcement around hate crime videos and things like that. So the reason I put it here is because CARO developed, and it's at the end of the year packet, pages 8 and 10, they developed a resource type of guide that they provided to the attendees of all the different California's legislation bills that are being presented that really impact state crimes and the work of HRCs. So I wanted to bring those forth and offer those to the commissioners. If you click on the link, it'll take you to the most up-to-date legislative bills. So whatever's in our document, it could be changed. It could have changed since the last time that this was put together, but I thought it would be a good resource for commissioners, because there's a lot of different legislation that is really going to impact the work, and not only the work, but mostly specifically around hate crime and hate response. There's even a talk about creating a California reporting line. So California would have their own hate crime reporting phone number. So there's just a lot of good information there that I wanted to make sure that you had and that I wanted to share. It's not on the agenda, but it is part of the first thing that me offered or shared. Before the end of the week, you will be receiving a save the date invite for the 2020 hate crime report release event in September. So, county has approved our flyer. We will send that out. The date has been set for Thursday, September 16th, from 9 to 10:30. But we will send out the save the date. We haven't figured out speakers, etc. We just want to make sure that people will be able to block their calendars for that day at that time, because we are hope for we will be releasing the 2020 hate crime data that day. So that's all we have. Thank you.
Thank you, Norma. I appreciate that. Great work. Really appreciate that. Okay, we'll now move on, Jamie, for that.
Okay. Item 10 is update from OC Chiefs and Sheriff.
Thanks. No further update today.
That was quick. Thank you. Appreciate it. All right. We'll move on to the next item.
Okay. Item 11 is OCSD Interfaith Council update.
Chief is my role model. No further update.
You guys had this predetermined somehow. What's going on? All right. I appreciate that. Thank you. I think you've covered a lot of ground over here. All right. Item 12.
And
any announcements on the commission side? Yeah. I just want to check your work. Any comments or any announcements to the commission? No? I just want to bring to your what the item that was left off, and that was at the top of the hour. We talked about it. The Commissioner Pessina reminded, and she was wondering why it was not included in this particular agenda. It is dealing with ethnic studies. It was there the last time, and we heard it from some of our listeners as well. So I'm just wanting to mention that, and perhaps we should put that back on for our next meeting so that we can talk in more detail and address those issues that are of concern in different spaces. Just want to bring that. There's nothing else. Is any other comments, closing remarks? No. Well, I want to thank each and every one of you. It's been a great meeting. A lot going on there. Great progress being made. Nice to have new, fresh ideas and members on board. A lot of energy here. Positive direction. Looking for good things and great things to happen at HRC and about partnering the different agencies, law enforcement, and everyone else out in the community. So thanks for great work and for your input. And to the staff, our staff is just amazing. I want to thank you, Norma, and Maureen, and me, and everyone else that is out there. If I forget your names, I don't want to do that and embarrass myself, but also to the county staff that supports us on these meetings and other events. So thank you so very much, and I guess we'll adjourn the meeting. Next time we meet, I guess it's going to be in, hopefully in person. We get to shake hands or something like that, right? So that'd be great if we can do that in July. But until then, have a wonderful time. Be safe.
Thank you.